You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast on BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Amy, and with me today is Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hey, good morning, afternoon, evening, Amy, wherever you are.
Yes. So what's new? I've been gone for a week. It did happen to be an original series week. Wonder if the listeners might figure that one out.
Well, Christos and I... Well, I had a fun time. I don't know about Christos. I think he kind of struggled last week with the TOS episode. But, well, I felt like he enjoyed our discussion at the very least. So as long as the discussion was fun, we're good. I tried this with all the Star Trek, but, you know, especially with TOS, to really try to, you know, accentuate the positive. And hopefully that came across to the listeners. We don't ever want to, like, punch down on any Star Trek, because all Star Trek is good Star Trek. That is what you get out of all good things, and we appreciate all of it. But it is a little more difficult with some of the shows and some of the episodes, but we do try to find things about it that we like.
Absolutely. And I've said this many times, and I will say it again. I do respect and honor the original series for what it gave us afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I give it a hard time. It doesn't age well for me. We get that. I'm just one voice among many. So just ignore me if I annoy you.
Yeah, if she annoys you, you can always check out one of her other 8 podcasts.
Yes.
They turn the dial and it's like, wait, she's on this one too. Oh, wait, no, she's on this one.
Yeah. I rave on and on about TNG and all those quote unquote bad episodes. There are no bad episodes.
Well, we do have a listener that agrees with us as far as there being good things about TOS. We got some great feedback just this evening from Twitter from David A. Quinley 21, who writes, # all Star Trek, number one of TOS's more interesting plots, # for the world is hollow and I have touched the sky, which is the longest # I've ever seen. It's not always perfect execution and now feels like sci-fi cliches, but this was pretty adventurous for its time, and still is concept-wise at Star Trek. Correct. Hmm. Yeah, that's what I got out of it too. You know, like I said, it reminded me of Plato's The Cave. You know, it reminded me of what George Lucas was trying to do with THX 1138, and so there's, you know, these great moral ideas that you can get out of this episode. And that's what, listen, you can't take that away from TOS. They do those moral stories really well.
Indeed. Yes, I will agree to that. Well, thank you, David, for your tweet.
Yeah, that's thanks, David. Nice. Now it's time for All Good World.
From Las Vegas to Boston, USA, to Canada and South America. From the United Kingdom to South Africa, from Russia to Australia, the South Pacific and beyond, this is All Good World.
Each episode we highlight a different location around the globe where this podcast has reached. Today's episode, we'd love to give a special shout out to Haiti. Fun fact, Haiti comes from the indigenous Taino language, in which it means land of high mountains. The island, which Haiti occupies the western 3/8, has been inhabited since about 5,000 BC by groups of Native Americans thought to have arrived from Central or South America. Genetic studies show that some of these groups were related to the, I'm going to mispronounce this, You know mommy? You know, your mommy? You know mommy? I tried. Of the Amazon basin. So that's really cool. I wonder how they got over there, Amy. Like some of these island nations, like, you know, even thinking about like, you know, Hawaii, it's like, how did people get there?
Yeah. And what makes a person go out into the ocean?
Just keep going.
Just to explore. Yeah. Like, you don't know where you're going to end up.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Yes.
And it's funny. We're talking about that this week. And in Lower Decks this week, one of the things that Captain Freeman was talking about is the fact that that was what the Federation was founded on, exploration and getting out there and seeing with your own eyes. And that is not something that can just be done with a drone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing that as I've gotten older, trying to put the phone down and experience life.
Yeah.
But it is a fine line because you want videos, you want photographs to capture the memory. Like, I love all my photos and pictures from STLV and the cruise, you know, to go back and, but put the phone down and experience life firsthand. It's a fine line that we have to find what works for each of us. Well, Mark, today we are going to introduce a new series. This has been way too long, Mark. Way too long.
I know, right? Yeah, we never introduce new series anymore.
I know.
So last year we did a special, it was a one-off called Things That Go Trek in the Night. And it was a good episode, but I thought, you know, this is a topic that I think we can dive deeper into as far as scary episodes of Trek, because especially like in the 56 years of Trek, there's a lot of spooky episodes. And so rather than just doing a one-off, I thought we could do a series and then just explore it throughout the year. So we'll just start now because it's around Halloween. And we are going to explore episodes throughout the franchise that make our spines tingle and our blood run cold. So for these episodes, we hope you will enjoy the journey with us and not get too scared.
Yes. And I think there, Star Trek is definitely doing some scary episodes and have done it. And so it's interesting as I was thinking about this, how sci-fi can spread its tentacles into the horror or into the fantasy, you know? And I think it's still, and that, for me, that's a good thing because I'm so Star Trek sci-fi. I don't like horror. I don't like the scary movies. So to occasionally get it is, I think,
it's
good
enough
for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's enough.
Well, we are going to launch Fear Factor Part 1 with the Strange New World episode, All Those Who Wander, which is Season 1, Episode 9. Now, I think I mentioned when Strange New Worlds was airing that eventually we would probably cover all the episodes on this show. And by golly, I'm gonna make good on that promise because you know me.
Yes, you love Strange
New Worlds. I couldn't possibly love it anymore. Hopefully they keep me going through season two. I hope it, you know, supposedly they've, you know, pushed it, the pedal to the metal for season two. So we'll see what they do. But listen, season one was just perfect in my opinion. Loved it. Not a bad episode in a bunch.
Well, let me give you a quick synopsis for All Those Who Wander. The USS Enterprise crew comes face to face with their demons and scary monsters too when their landing party is stranded on a barren planet with a ravenous enemy, the Gorn. Mark?
Yeah.
Was the Gorn supposed to be this scary in TOS?
Well, I've seen the arena, which is the, mm-hmm. the episode. I've seen that episode a dozen times. And yes, I do. I think it was supposed to be. I do. But they had a rubber mask and a guy in a suit, and he was slow moving because it was hard to move around in the rubber suit. And but yeah, I think he was supposed to be terrifying, but they just couldn't do that in the 50s or 60s. So
yeah, and I can go along with it is supposed to be scary, mm-hmm. but yeah, the moving, the motion of the Gorn, that threw me off. And then
it's
also
ridiculous.
They're highly intelligent. I didn't really get that from Arena. Like, I knew they were fierce, and I knew Kirk's life was in danger. So to jump to Strange New Worlds and have them be so highly intelligent and hierarchical in their social strata, like, these were things that it didn't even relate. And I'm like, this just doesn't seem like the Gorn. I almost wish that it would have been something new, a new alien.
Well, I challenge you, and we're gonna go through this at some point, but we're gonna do a new series at another point, because I have in the list of episodes coming up, we're gonna do a series where we're going to do a deep dive into the evolution of species, right? Mm. And so when we do that, we're going to watch multiple episodes that showcase a particular species and how it's evolved. So, like, we'll go to TOS and see an original, like, episode, and then we'll go and see how they were portrayed in Enterprise, and we'll see how they were portrayed in DS9 or whatever, and see how these characters have evolved throughout Trek franchise. And the Gorn is one of those that they did appear, I believe, on Enterprise as well. I think they had at least one episode there. So, and I remember that being an action adventure, scary kind of episode as well. So it fits in at least with that. But again, mm-hmm. I go back to, mm-hmm. there wasn't much they could do with it in TOS.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, Mark, what was the first time Star Trek scared you?
This is an easy one. That is Frame of Mind, which is probably one of my favorite Trek episodes ever. And yeah, if listeners are scratching their heads, it's the episode of TNG where you don't know what's real and what isn't real, and neither does Will Riker. Is he going insane? Has he been captured? What is happening? He doesn't know if he's in an alien insane asylum or if he's back on the Enterprise. And he's in a play that Beverly's putting on, but the play set looks just like the walls of his prison. And so for the audience too, it's like, we don't know what's going on either. And we're starting to get a little cuckoo. But there was something I could relate to even at a really early age, where it's the isolation of Will Riker. He was extremely alone in his feelings of just his losing control of his mind, right? And this was totally within himself. And the characters he's interacting with on the Enterprise and whatnot, they don't know the half of what he's going through. And so he's going through this journey by himself pretty much the whole episode. And to me, that's what made it the scariest, is that he's going through all this and he's going through it alone, and he doesn't know if he's losing his mind, and neither do we.
Yeah, that is a true psychological thriller, and I am a sucker for psychological thrillers. That is such a good episode. Oh,
we haven't done it here yet, have we?
No, but we can add it to our series.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Amy, same question for you. What Star Trek scared you for the first time?
Well, Frame of Mind definitely was, and I don't know what the first one, but the one that comes to mind is Schisms. Like, it just scares me. I know, the clicking. And when they go to the holodeck, even that, Even the holodeck is scary. Like, there's no, it's just the grids. And so it's this coldness of the holodeck where they're trying to recreate.
Computer, lower the lights. Metal.
Yes. And the lights and the table. It's a metal table. That's too big. And then when they are taking Riker and they're taking him through that subspace, you know, thingamajig, and they find his arm has been broken. What the heck? Like, it's such a fun who's doing this, but it's scary in that holodeck. And when you see them and we're in this, the subspace world that they're in, they're these hooded things. You can't really see them. That's a scary one for me.
It was, you know, Star Trek creates a lot of aliens every week. You know, they'll throw on a nose ridge or an earring or whatever, you know. And this was an example of them really going out there and making the alien to even the audience. It was very unrecognizable and unlike any other TNG alien or any other aliens we've seen in Star Trek. So for the audience, the viewers were just like, yeah, these are weird.
Yeah. And to your point, I think we are used to, seeing these aliens. And so to not see one really is like, whoa, it's kind of what's freaky. Going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder why they didn't do more with those fish head aliens. But you know, the ones that just, they put their hands in the vat of fish and they just, that was weird too, because weren't they eating fish? The fish were eating fish?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird. Anyway.
Well, Lwaxana sort of made them ridiculous, so they're not as intelligent.
Well, that was the one species she didn't try to hit on.
Yes. So, can we talk about components or ways to make an episode scary? Because I was watching it and it clicked on me when they were showing Spock, when Spock was, you know, in the corridor. Yeah. Like, they zoomed in on his face. It was dark. Mm. So I'm like, I really noticed the camera angles, and I'm like, there's got to be some angles that are specifically designed for horror or scary movies.
Yeah.
And I think I saw quite a lot of those in this episode.
Oh, yeah. When you mentioned that earlier, the first thing that came to mind for me was when that token red shirt. I know he doesn't have a red shirt, but the guy that got promoted was, he had been attacked or something, and he was laying back next to the Jeffries tube. And then the camera angle pans down from above his head, and it's a dark tube, and he's illuminated because he's in the light. But that, yeah, the random crewman number six, he, as he's sitting there, I was just like, oh, you should move. You should really move. Come on. Come on, buddy. And then all of a sudden, you know, you knew what was happening. It was like the Gorn grabbed him and dragged him off. But
yeah, it's like these camera angles are leading you to the anticipation and the move, get out of the way, you know. So that really does build. And I think, I mean, comparing this to even like the ones we were talking about before, Schisms and Frame of Mind, like, I feel that these camera angles and how the director, I don't know who it is, like, you know, chose those angles and shots did a way fantastic, top stellar job.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, though, that on that note, this was like purposeful. Like, they got this story from the writers and they're like, this is a scary story. We're going to make a scary episode. And so they did a lot of things to do that. But something I thought about on like the second or third watch, because I've seen it quite a few times this week, because newsflash, I love Strange New Worlds. Anyway, I was wondering if it took away a little bit from the scariness, knowing that Spock, Uhura, Pike, all of these characters, they're in the landing party, and you know that they survive, you know that they go on to do other things. So, I don't know, I feel like with characters like La'an, I mean, she totally could have died. And so I was a little bit more scared for her than I was for some of the other characters. Even Kirk's, is it his brother?
Lieutenant Sam Kirk.
Yeah, Sam Kirk. I was going to say Thomas Riker, but no, Sam Kirk. Even he, you know how he dies eventually in TOS. So he can't die. So like most of the people down there on the surface, I think it would have been more scary for me if a lot of the landing party was made up of, you know, crewman number sixes. And we'll see, ooh, who survives? Because right. If you send a bunch of people that you know have to live to the end of the episode, it's like it kind of takes away from the fear factor. For me, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sadly, we did lose Hemmer. So that was a big shock.
Yeah, that was unexpected.
And as you were talking, I was thinking about Hemmer. And I'm like, you know, they could have had him die by being attacked by the Gorn.
Mm-hmm.
But they almost made him like a sacrificial death, that he was saving the crew.
Yeah.
So his death wasn't in vain.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, like the crewman number sixes, you know, the red shirts, that they just die because.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a different level of death in these horde. You know, and that's wondering, I'm wondering, as you ask that question, like that Enterprise zombie episode.
Yeah, we covered that last year. Yeah.
Yeah, and we know that they make it, so was that less scary because we know they all make it?
Well, I think the only person, it was T'Pol. T'Pol was actually infected, mm-hmm. and she was under the influence. But we didn't necessarily know that Archer would make it out, or any of the others that were on it. I mean, we really didn't, because he's not, like, built into canon in the same way that, like, Spock is, or you know what I mean? Because we knew so little about Archer. He was a fresh character. So they really could have did anything. And in fact, I don't know if you know this trivia, but they were planning on killing him off, I think, after season 2. So they actually had thought about it.
Wow.
So.
Okay. So another scary part of the episode, which very cliche. There's no power. Everything's dark. We can't see anything. But I do like the flashlights on their shoulder. I think that's pretty smart.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
And I liked that they had the goggles that they had that were a reference to the cage.
Mm.
So that was cool. That's the first time we've seen the away team goggles since the cage.
Man, I didn't even catch that.
I'm a nerd. the lighting was cool. What I was going to say is about the set, I'm kind of conflicted. I know TOS, they would have definitely done a redress of the Enterprise if they were on another ship. It definitely would have been another, is it Constitution class? I think so.
Sure.
Yeah. But they didn't necessarily have to, A Strange New Worlds, because, I mean, they literally filmed next door to Discovery, and the Discovery was of the same time period. So I'm almost a little disappointed that they didn't reuse those sets to show a whole different side, because really, like, the whole time they're running around the Constitution class ship, it's like, yeah, but it looks just like the Enterprise. Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know, that was kind of my thought. But I guess they do that, that's a trope of Star Trek, because if you think about all the episodes of TNG where they went on to another, you know, Federation vessel, it all kind of looked like the corridors of the Enterprise.
Yes.
So there's that.
Yeah, there is that. And then, like, also, like, when you get the space scenes and you get other Federation ships, they all look like the Enterprise D, you know?
Yeah, they all kind of do. They're all named different things. Yeah. I like that they kind of did that in the last Lower Decks episode 2, where they had all of the California classes all showed up, and they're like copy-paste of the Cerritos, but a different color scheme.
Yes, got to change the colors. And then it's all brand new.
So one of the cool things that they really set up the scene was when they first get onto, I don't even know what the name of the ship is, but, you know, the Not Enterprise, when they get on that ship, they enter it, and it's like through a hatch door that's been blown open, and it's open to, you know, the outside, essentially, and the wind is howling through the corridors there, and you have bits of equipment that are sort of hanging there, slapping up against the wall. And so even just for a moment, just hearing the sound of the wind and hearing that piece of equipment sort of slapping up against, you know, the door, that was really setting the scene there too for like, okay, you should be worried.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that, again, I noticed, the music was obviously suspenseful and leading you to be scared and just like pulling you through the episode. Yeah. I thought it was so well done. And I watched it a couple times because it was pretty scary. And I'm like, okay, let's stop, take a break. When they were in sick bay, and the big guy who didn't know, who, you know, the translator didn't work.
Yeah.
And was protecting the girl.
Buckley.
And he, yes, Buckley. Thank you. And his, the slow breathing.
Yeah.
And then, oh my gosh, that was pretty scary.
So I got to throw this out there because you mentioned Buckley, but previously, when they had the Children of the Comet episode, which I recently rewatched too, they had the species that were coming after the comet and protecting the comet, right? Is it the Mahanit? No, the Mahanit was the comet. Anyway, but you know those creatures. So they had spent a lot of time and a lot of money crafting these great puppets, essentially, right? To make a really cool looking alien for Star Trek. But to me, the way it was filmed just really made it look CGI. And so all of that work for me was sort of like, but it still looks CGI. Even if it was physical, it didn't really look real to me. The flip side, this episode, Buckley, hats off to the makeup department, the costume department, you know, creature department. Hats off. Because this was a great, memorable looking alien that looked physically real, like he was in the room with them, and he was, but they did a really good job. And then there was so much to him, because like you said, like, he has these Gorn, you know, eggs sort of developing inside of him, and it's sort of pushing against his skin, and you're watching his skin sort of raise and lower, and his breathing's being affected, and he's got like this, let's call it ectoplasm. Take a page from Ghostbusters, but we'll just call it, because it looks like ectoplasm from Ghostbusters. But anyway, that green goo that is sort of dripping off him. And that's what it reminded me of. A little bit of Ghostbusters there too, thrown in. So there's a whole lot of callbacks to childhood scary Halloween-y movies in this.
Yes. You know, when I saw Buckley, I instantly thought of the Tenaxi, if I'm saying that right, from Beyond at the very beginning opening. And he's trying to give them their, you know, peace token. Yeah. And they're like, they want to eat us. And just his facial structure of Buckley reminded me. And I'm like, that's a callback to Beyond. And then I did research, and they're different species, but it did remind me. So I like Buckley.
Yeah, I did too. Hopefully we meet that species again and learn more about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was protecting the girl.
Well, One of the elements of a good scary movie or show are the heroics it takes to win the day. What are some great moments of bravery / heroics in this episode?
Yes. Well, as I mentioned, Hemmer.
Yeah.
I think him setting that up and working with La'an, because she had to jump in a container and they had to freezer air on him to freeze the Gorn, you know. I really think that showed, I mean, and you know, he's can't see, so like that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a whole other level of bravery right there. Yeah, you had mentioned La'an, and yes, definitely she used herself as bait to trap the Gorn. And the thing is with her background and what the Gorn did to her family and took away her childhood and has made her scared most of her life, I mean, that's the next level of bravery, to put herself in a scenario where, again, she's being hunted by this creature, but she's doing it, you know, to save the crew. I thought that was extremely brave. There was a line that La'an had, I don't know if it's Pike is asking her, I think it is Pike that's asking her what she wants to do. And she's like, well, I want to kill them, but I'd settle for getting the heck out of here, you know. And it came from a very real place. And I appreciated that comment because it was real. Like, that character has been through the ringer with the Gorn. But she put her duty, her service to Starfleet and her duty ahead of her personal feelings, and that was so Star Trek-y of her. I loved it. Yeah. Now, what about Spock in the hallway with, it looked like a spear, psyching himself up, getting super angry, and then charging at the Gorn?
Yeah, I'd like to discuss that.
Sweet.
but more so Spock's, what he had to do to get into his mindset in order to charge the Gorn with the spear.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that he had to, in his mind, switch over and release the emotions, which I don't know that I actually agree with, that he needed to do that. I mean, maybe it's, we'll get it more in the next season, obviously, with him and the doctor of, you know, well, you're part human, so it's your human emotions. You need to learn to deal with it. Yeah. Maybe, but logically, he's in a life or death situation. He should not have to get these emotions. Logically, he needs to kill the Gorn. There's no emotion about it. It's you or the Gorn who's going to survive. So I just didn't see that it was necessary to build up these emotions because logically he needed to do what he needed to do.
Yeah, I can see your point. I will say that I appreciated his emotional outburst of rage here where I didn't in Discovery with Michael. That to me, when he was playing chess, seemed like he was throwing a tantrum. And that scene I can't even watch. In all my rewatches, I skip that scene every time because I'm like, this is just awful. It's an awful scene. It's an awfully written scene. It's an awful acted scene. Ethan Peck, who I love now as Spock, isn't good in that scene. He's just, it's just unbelievable. The he's just acting like a, I guess like a, I don't know, like a teenager, like having a little tantrum. I don't know. It's just,
temper tantrum.
And it's not Spock. And it just totally takes me out of it. But here in this part, you can see that again, that he had to force that emotion to come out of him. And he was doing it to antagonize the Gorn. Because he could go over and poke it with a stick and they come out, you know. That A, it wouldn't make for good television, but B, you know, the Gorn might be less apt to react unless it felt like it was actually threatened. And a way to make it actually threatened is to come at it with rage, pure rage. Mm-hmm. And this is actually really good because it talks a little bit about what Vulcans have to do as far as suppressing that those feelings, because that is bubbling underneath the surface of all Vulcans, right? So we've learned that throughout the history of Trek. And so the fact that it lingers on through to the end of the episode with him clenching his fists and them sort of showing that he's still battling with it, it's not easy for him to get back into it. It's not the reset button that we're used to. It certainly is a lot more believable, like I said, than mm-hmm. the teenage tantrum of Star Trek Discovery Spock.
Yeah. No, and I love that we get to explore that, because every single one of us has to deal with at some point in our lives emotions getting out of control, and how do we get them back into control and go to the logical side? Are they important to have these emotions? Yes, I absolutely agree. And so we get that exploration in Spock. I wish I could show and teach my students, you know, because they are just emotional beings. And it's like, okay, control it. There's a time and a place. Anyways, I digress. I've been having some serious conversations with my students this past week. So can we go to assimilation or regeneration?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. So one thing that I'm going to regenerate and just put it back.
Uh-oh.
The Gorn again. Okay.
The
so
Gorn? Like the whole species of the Gorn, you're just like regeneration. No, don't like the species. What?
Well, you know, I said it didn't really match up with Arena.
Amy. It doesn't match with Arena. Oh my goodness, Amy. Oh. I'm going to regenerate your comment.
This one specific, they get born and they're what, maybe 5-6 inches?
Mm-hmm.
And within minutes, they're teenagers. And
no.
What do you mean, no?
No.
Yeah, there were 3 Gorn mm-hmm. that were birthed.
Mm-hmm.
Or 6 of them or something, and then they ate each other, and then we had the male dominance or
yeah, but
not male
dominance. You got to think that, so the ship itself, they can't detect the life signs on it, right? And so how I perceived it is the Gorn are born out of the bodies of, you know, these unwitting hosts, right?
Of Buckley.
Yeah, Buckley, but, you know, of the other... the crew members too. We just didn't see that. And so we see them being born and being tiny there, but I always took it as the larger ones we see were the ones that were there.
Oh, that were already there.
Yes. Laying in wait.
Oh.
Like those are the ones that were born way earlier, maybe weeks earlier.
Okay, and so you're saying because we aren't able to detect them, we don't know how many they are.
There.
I was going under the assumption that there was 0, and then those hatchlings. Okay, all right, okay.
A little better?
Thank you for fixing that.
I just think they're great, and I hope that they bring them back for season 2. It's just fun because that is always been a fan favorite species, but they only had that one goofy outing in TOS. Let's be real, it was goofy. And now it's a species that's really getting fleshed out. It's the same with the Andorians. The Andorians were kind of goofy if you saw them on TOS. I mean, there wasn't much to that culture. But then here comes Enterprise, and all of a sudden, now, you know, and now they're on Discovery and stuff, and they are really a cool, fleshed out alien species with this really unique backstory of like kind of like almost like a warlike, you know, species, but they came together as like a founding member of the Federation. And I don't know. And the Enar are on their planet too. They coexist, and one's under ice. I don't know. Like, yeah. I like that we're going back to the well with TOS and then taking these one-off alien of the week aliens and really making them cool. So anyway, so I don't know. Okay. For me, it's an assimilation. I'm going to assimilate your regeneration.
Okay. Oh, okay. One thing that I'm definitely assimilating is Daddy Pike. And this episode, he truly is Daddy. Because at the beginning, you know, when they're like, we're going to take the shuttle and go here.
The station wagon.
Yep. Road trip in the station wagon. Anyone got to go? It's your last chance. Don't make me turn this starship around. Loved all of it. All of it. All of it. Daddy Pike. Hello, assimilate.
Spock not getting the reference reminded me a lot of like Data from TNG. Just like, you know, station wagon.
Yeah. And like they're all sitting around at Saturday breakfast, you know, try the pancakes. And she's like, no, 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 no. And then like, that is good.
I was getting like a holiday theme from it. I felt like a little bit of a Thanksgiving / Christmas vibe at the beginning of this, which is so strange because it went into a horror episode, but I was getting totally those vibes at the beginning.
Well, you know, you eat a nice big breakfast before going out trick-or-treating.
Sure.
I don't know. How about that? And it was so sad when I saw Hemmer and I was like, oh, I forgot that we lost Hemmer. It just made me sad to see him again.
So was that an assimilation or regeneration?
You know, it's in the middle. I don't know. I get why they, you know, killed him off and it was a good death. But it just made me sad because I really did like his character. I don't know.
I'll assimilate the comment he made before he jumped, which was, oh, like the winds of, it feels like the winds of Andoria, you know, like his home planet. Like he feels that icy cold air. And it just reminded him of home. And I just thought about when we went to Andoria in Enterprise. For the first time, and we're, you know, archers walking around in the ice caves and whatnot. And so, yeah, just made me think of that. And I was like, yeah, it was like Andoria. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good send-off for him. Okay, so another Kelvin timeline reference that I associated with. When Lieutenant Kirk is questioning Spock and like, you don't feel anything?
Oh, yes.
It totally reminded me of Kirk and Spock in Star Trek 09. You know, when he was trying to get Spock to lose control so that Kirk could become captain. That was just as pointed. And I was like, dang. I think that there is a reference to 09.
Oh, it has to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that it's Sam Kirk.
It's Sam Kirk. Yeah.
You know, Kirk wouldn't, Lieutenant Kirk wouldn't be talking to Spock that way normally. Yeah. I think that was just written in as a reference to the Kelvin timeline.
Now, I'm going to put Lieutenant Kirk into regeneration this week. I've always been kind of lukewarm on the character, but this week, nah. Because he is a Starfleet officer. Heck, it's, you know, Captain Kirk's, what, older brother? He should not be behaving that way.
No. And I'm sorry. In Next Gen, when Wesley's going through his training and he has the psych eval and he has to come up against his darkest fears and he has to go in and save, you know, like, you are getting trained. Even before getting admitted into Starfleet, you are getting trained. And so for him to be freaking out, I know it's a tense situation, but you have training to pull on and you have others that are giving you the example so that you can get your crap together and be a Starfleet officer.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Regenerate.
Sweet. Sorry, Sam, not this week. So I have an assimilation and a regeneration for our next character. So assimilation, I love Jess Bush as Christine Chapel. And in this episode, wow, is she just like a really cool heroine into, you know, save the little girl when she's in the sick bay, you know, when she is trying to figure out how to, you know, save Hemmer, her, you know, running around by herself and trying to figure out a way out of sick bay and how to communicate with the rest of the team. She doesn't lose her cool in the way that Lieutenant Kirk does. She stays cool, calm, and collected, methodical. Yes, you can tell she's a little freaked out, but she just gets the job done. And so for me, I will assimilate Christine Chapel this week because I think, you know, Jess Bush did great performing her. And I feel like, you know, her character really stood out in this episode. But here's...
Sounds like a big but.
Here's the regeneration. And I don't hear it very often, but once in a while, Jess will slip into her Australian accent. And she said something this week, I forget what it was, but it was 100% with the Australian accent. And I was like, oh wait, but that's not Christine Chapel. And whenever she does it, it totally is out of the character. And I know she's Australian, and I get that, and I love her, but she needs to try to stay with her pseudo-American accent for the role. Otherwise, these little moments are going to keep taking me out of the episodes, and it's going to drive me crazy. But I do love her, and I think she's great. But occasionally, it's a mess.
I wonder why they didn't have her use her normal
Because it's accent. Christine Chapel, and she's not Australian. I don't know why they didn't get an American actress. I love Jess Bush, though. I do love her as Christine Chapel. I think she's fantastic, really. But sometimes she slips, and she did today, and I was like, ugh, takes me out for a second. And then I move on and continue loving her.
I still want to be on record that I don't want her and Spock together.
Well, you got to bring that up, huh?
Yeah.
I don't think that they will, obviously, because in TOS they're not together, so I don't think it's going to go that route. Plus, in TOS, he's still engaged to Pring, so I don't feel like with canon it really can go anywhere. I think they got as close as they could in that one episode, The Serene Squall. If you remember, they pretended to be in love and to make out. That was a really good pretending. But that's probably as close as we're going to get. I don't think they're going to end up in bed together again anytime soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
But damn canon, because they'd be a great couple. I would love it. Yeah, I love them. I love both of them.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, but what if there was no T'Pring? Would you feel different?
Yes.
Would you be rooting for them?
I love T'Pring.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, I love T'Pring. I want her. I want to see her every single episode. She's gorgeous. She's good for Spock.
Yeah.
Oh, love her.
She definitely grew on me.
She needs to come to a convention.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. I would love that.
Me too.
T'Pring in the original series. Here we go, talking again. The original series, like, that character was very one note, and you don't like her.
Oh, I liked her in the original series, too.
I don't like her. Oh. I thought she was kind of a B. But anyway.
But that's because she's Vulcan.
I didn't want to like her in this, but I did. I think it was the Spock amok that sold me.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And I don't even really, this is probably my least favorite episode of this season, but it's fun. And
oh my gosh.
I do fall for T'Pring after that episode. I'm just like, okay, I like her.
Yeah. Well, Mark, do we have some trivia about this episode?
Yes! So writer Davy Perez acknowledged the episode was influenced heavily by films such as Alien and Predator, The Thing, and Gremlins. Oh my god, Gremlins.
Yes. Definitely Alien. I mean, does every show have to have a little girl that survives the big bad aliens? Well, we have it here.
Yeah. Well, and the Thing's busting out of Buckley, or like, you know, the Thing's an alien that busts out of the chest.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. I don't know the Thing reference.
I never saw the Thing.
Yeah, me neither.
Seen Gremlins.
Yes. I think that reference would be like them not wanting to be in the cold.
Maybe, or maybe the little babies. I don't know.
Predator. I'm trying to think of predator.
Oh, a predator. Immediately, that's when it's the point of view, the camera is from the point of view of the Gorn chasing Christine Chapel. And it's sort of night mode kind of camera.
The heat
sensor. Yeah, that is 100% from Predator.
Okay, good. Well, this is the fourth time Star Trek has killed off a main character in the first season. And we lost Hemmer. Can you name the other three? Of course, Tasha Yar.
Yeah.
That was the one that I knew. And then I was like, gosh, what other ones did we do? Well, Lorca.
Mm-hmm.
First season of Discovery, right? What's past his prologue. Mm-hmm. We lost Captain Lorca. And I would definitely say he's a main character.
Yeah.
Then this other one, I might have to regenerate it. But Shax, in no small parts. Here's why I'm going to regenerate that.
He regenerated.
Yeah.
He didn't actually die.
He was resurrected.
Yeah.
He didn't really die, so there's that.
Well, they never explained it.
I don't think that Shax Bean is a main character on Lower Decks. He's a secondary.
Yeah, because all the bridge crew are secondary.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
good point, Amy.
That trivia, I think it'd be, I don't know. Mark, final thoughts.
I wish that I started recording All Good Things when you guys were covering each new episode as it dropped week after week, because I just want to keep going through more Strange New Worlds. This was a fun week for me, and I threw a bone at you because next week I think it's going to be a fun one for you. And I love so much about this episode, but I can say that of all the Strange New Worlds episodes. I don't know. It was just fun. That's all. I was glad to be here.
Yeah, I think as far as fear factor, this definitely is a 10. I think, again, we talked about the cinematography and the camera angles and the music and the suspense and the creatures and the CGI, and we saw the Gorm, but we didn't see them. So they're still mysterious, but we got a picture of them.
Yeah.
It definitely scary episode. I think there's not another Star Trek that's scarier than this one because of all the components, how they fit together. And one other thing I noticed is that we didn't bounce back and forth between the A and the B plot.
No.
Because we have, right, number one, she's off doing her thing, and we don't ever finish that part of the story. Nope. We're focused, we're sustained, we're here, and I really do think out of all the scary episodes there have been in Star Trek, Strange New World has done it the best.
Yes! That's awesome. So it was a good launch of our new series.
Oh, great. It's only downhill from here.
No, I got some TOS on there. So, you know, you'll love those episodes too. They just might not scare the bejesus out of you like this week.
Right. So listeners, what scary episodes would you want us to include in this Fear Factor series? Next week. Mark, what are we talking about? What should our listeners watch?
I was waiting for the listeners to respond, but nobody said anything.
Oh, they will for sure on Facebook and Twitter.
All right. So next week, we are going to be continuing with our addiction series, and we'll be covering the TNG episode, The Game. Previously covered episode was another TNG episode, Symbiosis. So that was a theme from TNG that they had a bunch of episodes, you know, covering addiction. But I think, you know, it's the 90s. That was what people were talking about. That was water cooler conversations, the war on drugs and whatnot.
Yeah, well, the Reagan era DARE program, it was challenged by the president's office to, you know, make more of a discussion, yeah. And we definitely get that in TNG.
Now, while I got you, TNG's The Game, I included it in the Addiction series for a reason, because they're addicted to it, but how do you feel mm-hmm. about it personally being included in the Addiction series? Like, I had my reasons, but...
It fits perfectly. Okay. That is an absolute addiction. Your chemical reaction in the brain, yeah. That's an addiction, yeah.
Beverly it's Crusher certainly yeah. certainly has a reaction to The Game.
Mm-hmm. It's a great episode. I'm glad you put it there.
Sweet.
And how interesting enough, we got a symbiosis connection in Lower Decks.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the new Star Trek just keeps listening to all good things because we talk about it and then they do it.
This is where they're getting all of their ideas. Why aren't they paying us?
Yes.
They could at least come on.
Exactly. Well, we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode and our new series, Fear Factor. Hope you'll join the conversation on Facebook. BQN Collective is where you want to be. You can also tweet us at AllGoodPod. Now you can find our network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcast. We've also partnered with our friends at Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find us by searching their master feed. Mark, which reminds me, Union Federation covers the new Trek. You should be our recurring guest when we do Strange New Worlds.
Absolutely, would love to. I came on this last time to talk about the Elysian Kingdom because I begged them. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I love this episode so much. Let me on to talk about it. And then nobody else loved it as much as me.
Yeah, I did not.
But you know what? But I was there beating my drum and it felt good.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to make that happen.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Mark, where can people find you when you're not throwing spears at Gorn?
You make me so angry. When I am not chasing a Gorn down a dark hallway with a spear, well, you can find me on the BQN Collective group on Facebook. You can also find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. And you can find me on my show, It's Green, if you become a patron of the network on Patreon. And listeners, a new episode just dropped, and I'm really proud of this one. Me and Casey Pettit, also from this network, he's on Mickey's Marvels. We cover the Tim Burton film Ed Wood, and we actually talk a lot about all kinds of different films before we dive into that one. So it's it's a very fun and lengthy discussion about our love of cinema and also the movie Ed Wood.
And so you're going to be sort of going through and having each of the hosts on the network do an It's Green, correct?
Yes, that is the idea. Yeah.
And so this will be a good way for our patrons to really get some in-depth knowledge, info, you know, maybe some blackmail material, right? You know, of the hosts of the network. I think it's a great idea.
Well, I know before I was on and when I was just listening, I knew how much listening to my favorite hosts meant to me to get through my day or my week. And so to be able to, I guess, you know, you can communicate with them through signing up for Patreon, but also, you know, through something like It's Green, you can listen and then learn more about them, opening up in a new way. And I'm having the time of my life with it. And so I'm looking forward to you know, our listeners checking out as well.
You know, that reminds me of when I first found podcasts, and especially the Trek ones, and it was the host way long ago of Earl Grey, before I took over. I really can't believe I took over it, because I was so in love with those hosts, and oh, I wanted more of them. So I totally understand that, and I'm glad that you're doing that, because as a listener, that's what I wanted. I wanted to know more about the people that I was listening each and every week. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, well, you know, and I also want to learn more about math. And so thankfully you teach me about that on Amy's Math Moments.
I don't know how well that's going over, but I have fun.
And Amy, where can people find you when you are not using yourself as bait to trap a Gorn and protect the crew?
Well, when I'm not doing that, you can find me doing that because I will do that if they're my students. But
and your
you
co-host?
Can find me. Yes, and yes, all my co-hosts.
Thank you. Thank you. Just checking. Making sure.
Yes. So you can find me here on the network where I'm co-hosting a couple other podcasts, Union Federation, which talks about the new Star Trek coming out. Have a good time doing that. And on Galaxy Class, which is about TNG, my favorite series. And of course, putting out some Amy's Math Moments. I do have another one, another idea that's in the works, so I'm researching and getting that going. You can find me on Twitter, at Miss Amy Nelson, but goodness, I'm really more on Facebook, so BQN Collective is where you can find me there. Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. That really does help others to find the show. And if you do leave us a rating and written review, we will enter you into our promotion. Yes, we will enter you into our promotion that is Grounds and Hounds Coffee. Mark, take it away. A tribute to Murphy.
Oh, that's right. So this is, you know, we're stretching it out an extra week here because this episode's still, you know,
technically
we're still in October. So we're going to stretch this out another week and going into November a little bit. But so through this month, if you hear this episode, you can enter. Anyway, we'll say that. As Amy had mentioned, leave a written review and we will pick our favorite and you can win some coffee from Grounds and Hounds Coffee. Grounds and Hounds Coffee Company believes that great coffee can fuel a greater purpose. Through the sale of organic and eco-friendly specialty coffees, they can support rescue initiatives and organizations, providing a second chance for pups in need. 20% of all Grounds and Hounds profits are deployed to rescue organizations working to make the second chance mission a reality. So listeners, leave a review, win coffee, and save puppies.
That is such a very good cause, so please leave us.
Yeah, leave us a review. Save some puppies.
Yeah.
At this time, we would like to thank our associate producers, Mahendran Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. And always a special thanks to Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Join the Hive, and that's where we put our little episodes of It's Green and Amy's Math Moments. We also have our early releases. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our monthly Patreon roundtable, The Hive Mind, which happens on the second Saturday of each month. You can visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us as we search out
all good things!
Woo!
Yeah, well, you know, it was a scary episode.